You're listening to This Week in UX for February 22nd, 2010. Welcome again to This Week in UX. I am your host, Joseph Dickerson. I'd like to thank all of my listeners who have subscribed via iTunes, as well as those people who have visited our interesting website, or at least I call it interesting, at thisweekinux.com. There is quite a bit of things that have been going on in the world of software and user experience design in the past week or two. I'm excited about this episode, and I hope you will get something out of it. I definitely think that there's a lot of really interesting things, and to paraphrase the old Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. Well, I think we're definitely in those times right now when it comes to experience design. So let's go ahead and get started. The thing that I'm most excited about this week is something I did not expect I would be excited about at all, which was the unveiling of the new Windows Mobile 7. Windows Mobile 7 was unveiled at the Global Mobile Conference in Barcelona, Spain this past week, and it's actually been rebranded and renamed, and it's now called Windows Phone 7, which, like the iPad, I don't think that's a very, well, good name, but let's talk about the UI itself. Let's talk about the experience design. What they've done is kind of, honestly, a little bold. What they've created is they've created an actual mobile UI that is based on data and is very much data-centric instead of app or function-centric. So the idea behind it is if you look at your friend, you have options that fly out from that particular view of that friend about what they're doing, i.e. Facebook updates or Twitter updates, how you can contact them via email, via a call, and photos that they might have posted via free sites such as Flickr. And much of the whole UI has been completely reimagined in a way that I think is again, quite interesting and very un-Microsoft-like, to be frank. It's basically a very agile UI where you basically slide from one view to another. And again, you're not going to see a lot of app icons. You're going to see context-driven information presented in the appropriate way based on what you're doing. It's kind of blocky in a way. It's not really a bunch of icons. And it's really a different way of looking at interacting with your information, not necessarily opening and launching applications. I actually saw a couple of comments online that said this actually would be a much more effective interface if there was a bigger screen, a la a tablet. I actually kind of agree with that, looking at some of the screen designs. And again, there's plenty of videos available through YouTube and sites like Gizmodo or Engadget that kind of show you how the experience works. Yes, a bigger screen would definitely benefit this design, but I don't think it takes away from this very, again, I keep going back to the word bold approach to a mobile operating system that Microsoft, again, I'm catching myself as I say it, Microsoft has brought out. I actually wrote a blog entry at my website, josephdickerson.com, talking about the fact that featureitis, which is what all these large companies used to do, is pretty much dead in the water. Companies used to really, for each subsequent release, pile on feature after feature like a grocery list. And now it's not that way anymore. People are focused on how the design works, how the features interact with users. And again, it's a great time to be a professional in user experience because you see all these big companies like Microsoft coming around to the idea that you can't keep selling features. You have to start designing for the user. You have to make the experience better. You have to make what you present to your customers something that is more real and more authentic and more useful instead of just a bunch of icons. I think that Windows Phone 7 is a shot against the bow of a certain very large company that has a phone of its own, as well as a future tablet, if you know what I mean, reading between the lines. And honestly, Apple needs to actually step forward. I think when it comes to experience design, they've become a little safe, a little complacent. When you see large companies like Microsoft trying something different and unique in this space, A, it means that Microsoft has nothing to lose, obviously. But B, it means that the industry leaders, such as Apple and, you know, additionally Nokia, need to start stepping up. So, again, really good news. The more innovative these companies like Microsoft becomes, the better the experience is for users, the richer the opportunity for experienced designers such as myself and whoever is listening to this podcast, obviously, is. And I think it's again, good news. Whether you're pro-Microsoft or anti-Microsoft, you got to give them some mad props for some of the good work they're doing in the mobile space. When it comes to user experience design, there was a kind of a funny thing that happened about a week ago. Facebook, as you well know by now, has redesigned their initial front-end UI, and a lot of people have actually been kind of critical of it. And 2 points I'd like to make about that. First off, they redesigned their UI and actually broke their search, because there's now a global search where you can actually look throughout the Facebook information. And, for example, I'm going to South by Southwest Interactive in March, and I actually searched in the new UI for South by Southwest to go to the event to say that I was attending. Well, the new search completely failed. It actually searched locally on my information. It didn't search on the global pages in Facebook at all. So that's a huge issue when it comes to usability and design. Hopefully they will remediate at some point. And, you know, I don't think I'm using their search wrong. And if I am using their search wrong, well, that's not my fault. That's Facebook's fault. The second and most interesting thing is website Read Write Web. Sorry about that. Actually did a article on the new Facebook UI, and they actually talked about the new Facebook login, which was also slightly changed. This is, again, a good example of how people use the internet and specifically Google, because their page, this article was presented on, was actually ranked very highly in the Google search results. Quite a few people thought that this Read-Write-Web article was the actual login for Facebook, because the user would Google Facebook login and they would get this Read-Write-Web article first. So I thought that was incredibly amusing that many of the comments on that web page was actually talking about how I can't find my login. How do I log into Facebook now? Facebook has screwed it up. Well, you know, they're trying to log in at a different website altogether. Not to make fun of the users, obviously, because you know, I'm a user-centered designer. I don't want to mock the individuals who are using the applications that I myself use and or design. But I think it's interesting that the usage pattern of Google has so influenced people's behavior that they actually, instead of having a bookmark for Facebook, they would Google Facebook login to go to log into their account. How powerful is Google when you look at it from that perspective? In my opinion, maybe a little too powerful. To end and wrap up that idea segment on Facebook, Read-Write-Web actually had to add a content area to the article saying, "We are not Facebook. If you are going here to log on to Facebook, go to Facebook.com to do so. Please don't try it here." Again, I think it's very interesting. That is representative of how people use the Google web, because it's in many ways it's Google's web. We're just living in it. Last big story that kind of broke in the hiatus between episodes. This hiatus was driven mostly by me traveling internationally for business. Google put out another new feature, and this feature was called Google Buzz. Google Buzz actually integrated some social networking functionality into Gmail. And the recent Facebook security updates to their security privacy policy didn't go as well as one would have hoped. The main problem was basically opted everyone in to Google Buzz who had a Google Gmail account. The problem is a lot of people had their information basically presented to all of their, quote, friends through Google Buzz, because those friends were automatically set up for users by Google. That's a problem in that many people obviously don't want their contact information or any other content shared with people they should, might have randomly sent an email to years and years ago. Well, Google quickly changed the automatic opt-in to a optional opt-in type of policy where they basically said, do you want these people to be in your Google Buzz? And I played with Google Buzz quite a bit. I think that this, along with Microsoft's efforts to integrate social media into Outlook 2010, is kind of a half-baked idea. And the reason why I say that is because people have different usage patterns. They go to Gmail not to do social networking or to inform their friends. They go to have conversations that are very focused and isolated and really siloed away from their Facebook and their Twitter type of chat. So the idea of integrating those two things may or may not succeed long term. I know that there's been a huge adoption of Google Buzz, and I'm nothing to but excited about the idea of having competitors for Twitter and competitors for Facebook. But I think that the idea is kind of not ready for prime time. I see a lot of potential privacy issues still not necessarily thought through by the design team. And I see a lot of opportunity for problems, as it were. And I also think that we're seeing an age which I think is very similar to the dot-com boom of the 1990s, where a lot of these companies are competing with each other, and so they're rushing new features and changes out before they actually have a chance to analyze them, test them effectively with users, and they're actually just kind of launching things before they really start to think through the full repercussions of how these things should work. Now, I'm not saying that the Google Buzz is bad or good. I'm still kind of reserving judgment. I think it's not necessarily the most appropriate functionality to put inside of an email type of system. But I give them credit for innovating and trying, which is kind of Google's approach. They throw a lot of stuff against the wall, and hopefully sometimes stuff sticks. Other times it doesn't. But that's, again, to their credit that they're trying. A lot of companies historically have not. I think that's an incredibly interesting situation, and definitely should be something we pay attention to when it comes to Google Buzz. Last thing I want to talk about is kind of a fallout of from the iPad announcement late January. What was noted and a subject of much criticism was the fact that the iPad does not actually support Flash, much like the iPhone or the iPod Touch does not support Flash. The iPad is based on the same operating system that those two devices use, and therefore Flash is not kind of invited. Steve Jobs actually had a very direct statement to make to the Wall Street Journal this past week about Flash, saying basically that Adobe's Flash was yesterday's technology and that HTML5 was going to basically supplant it in future generations of products and browsers. And finally, and most importantly, if they actually integrated and made made Flash work inside of the iPad would last approximately an hour and a half because Flash would eat up its battery life because it would suck so much processing power from the device. Haven't heard about Adobe's response to that, but I do know that on the actual Safari browser on OS X, Flash is a huge processor hog. Any Flash site I go to tends to really suck the processing power to almost 100%. And it's not surprising that Apple and Steve Jobs would actually present that as a reason to not use Flash on their next-generation devices, such as the iPad. We're actually hearing news from the mobile conference that I mentioned earlier that Windows Mobile might actually not support Flash anymore, and Android from Google, I don't believe, supports Flash at all. So if I was Adobe, I would definitely be looking at optimizing Flash and seeing how we can fix this particular problem, because with HTML5 and other future generation technologies coming out, Flash might be kind of the redheaded stepchild and not have a future unless they act quickly. Well, that is it for this week in UX. I want to apologize for the quality of my voice. I've actually had a chest cold for the past couple of weeks, and I'm just now recovering, but there were so many things going on in the world of UX that I really wanted to put this podcast out. So hopefully my voice will be in better form coming up in future episodes. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, I want to thank all of the subscribers through iTunes, Google, This Week in UX, and you'll find our website, thisweekinux.com. And if you're interested in any more of my incandescent ramblings, you can check out my personal website, josephdickerson.com. Until next time, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.